I play through it, and he just, you know, nods his head no. No. And he says, Anakiko, why did you play that so fast? And I was like, what? That's the marking that you put in yourself.
And that's what it was like for Anakiko Myers to work with Arvo Pärt, one of five composers with whom she worked on her new recording called Mirror in Mirror. It's a beautiful new legacy for the violin repertoire. I hope you'll enjoy this week's edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. And this is album number 37 for you. Wow, that I couldn't believe that when I saw that in the liner notes that you've recorded 37 albums. Does it feel like that many?
Yes, it does. Totally does. I always say after each one, like, that is it. I'm packing up my bags. I'm getting out of here. No more. But somehow I get pulled back in and I don't know how many more are left in me.
Now, why do you say that, though? Is the recording process so arduous, or why do you say that?
Well, this project, Mirror and Mirror, really was a very collaborative process, but it took 10 years to create. And just the recording itself was over 2 years time span. So that's a lot of traveling, and we were in three different studios, from the UK to New York City, New York State, to record all the various pieces on the album.
Well, you also had the opportunity to work directly with five of the six composers and arrangers, which is pretty unique.
Yes, really an unbelievable and unforgettable experience, for sure. And I just have such a passion to follow these composers, and such a deep respect and awe for composers in general. And it just brings back, you know, how I really wish I could just go back in time and harass so many composers who didn't leave enough violin repertoire in their legacy.
Like Maurice Ravel, perhaps.
Like Chopin, like Rachmaninoff. Oh, that one. I would have never let him go. yeah, Ravel too, for sure. Gershwin. Oh, Gershwin.
Let's talk about the Ravel piece, and then we'll dive into the rest, because the Ravel is the one piece where you didn't have the opportunity to speak and work directly with the composer. And there are some unique things about this piece, because it was featured originally on a hybrid piano.
Yeah, so, you know, most people are very familiar with the orchestral and piano versions, but when I did a little research, I found that the original version was for luthiel and violin. And most people don't have a clue what a luthiel is, and it was a very short-lived invention that was an attachment that was put onto the piano to make it sound like a cembalom. And a cembalom is sort of sounds like a prepared piano. And so what we did, since there's only one luthiel in the world and it's stored in a museum in Brussels, we sampled that sound. And we piped it into the studio in New York City. And thanks to Jakub Czupinski, the Polish composer, he helped bring that into the studio. And then Elizabeth Pridgen was at the keyboard. Then I did the violin part, and voila, you know, we stuck it in the oven and we had the Tzigan.
Wow. Well, thank you for all that work. That's a recipe that we probably can't recreate at home.
It was a really wild and crazy experience, that's for sure.
The recording opens with an arrangement for you of the Metamorphosis No. 2 by Philip Glass. Why did you want this piece to be the opening piece on the recording?
It is so soulful. It's very soulful music, and it's very haunting. And when I heard the original for piano solo, I immediately thought, oh, the violin has to get in there somehow. This has to be arranged for violin. So after contacting Philip Glass, he recommended that I work with Michael Reisman, who has worked with Philip for decades. And as Michael was arranging the piece, he wasn't aware that Arvo Pärt's Fratres was listed as number 2 on the album. And he just coincidentally mentioned, he's like, you know, my version of Metamorphosis is very influenced by Arvo Pärt's Fratres. And I was so amazed with that statement. I was like, wow, are you reading my mind?
Well, the title track is also an Arvo Pärt piece, and he's a composer that you had a chance to work with a few years ago. Did you get a chance to work with him specifically as you were putting this recording together?
Many years ago, when I first collaborated with Arvo, it was such a, you know, surreal experience. It was, to me, like I was meeting God, you know, like seriously, like I couldn't believe that he was 6 feet in front of me during Fratres. And the opening cadenza is something out of this world, where it starts with a mega quadruple pianissimo and then ends with a mega quadruple fortissimo. And it's supposed to be this like wave of sound at a very fast pace. And there is this tempo marking there that was close to impossible, but I was doing everything possible to try to get to that tempo marking. And finally, he's sitting there, and I play through it, and he just nods his head, no, 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 no. And he says, Anakiko, why did you play that so fast? And I was like, what? That's the marking that you put in yourself, you know? And I thought, wow, that is just so amazing that, you know, musicians are so hung up on tempo markings and everything that is put into a score and trying to find it, you know, follow it so religiously. But even the composers themselves have changed. And what he wrote in 1977 might not apply anymore in 2018. You know, so I found that was very freeing, as I could, you know, do it, play the opening at a more natural pace and create the story within that piece that was meant to be heard.
There are two lullabies on this recording, and one was written for your daughter, Natalie, by John Corleano. Tell me how this one came to be.
Yeah, so my husband surprised me with a great gift. I mean, not only did we have Natalie, but he asked John Corigliano to write a special lullaby for her. But, you know, after she was born, we couldn't figure out her name for a little bit of time. So it was a lullaby for, you know, a random baby for a little bit of time, until Natalie finally was, we decided that's going to be her name. And the funny thing is, you know, I hear her name throughout it everywhere. I mean, it's just, it's everywhere. The way that the phrase is and the way he wrote it. To this day, Miss Natalie, who's now 8 years old, listens to her lullaby every other day because her younger sister has claimed Spiegel and Spiegel as her lullaby.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's almost as if he helped you name the baby.
Yes, it does feel that way.
Very cool. Well, the other lullaby is one that you and your sister used to hear on a regular basis that your mother sung to you.
Yeah, so when I was a little girl, my mother is Japanese, and she would sing this beautiful song, the Edo lullaby, and Tokyo used to be called Edo, and it's a very nostalgic song, and every time I play it or listen to it, you know, it really makes me cry. There's just something so primal about one's mother singing you a song to help you go to sleep. And I think it's something that just remains in your heart forever.
And tell me about this particular arrangement.
So Jakub Czupinski is a very talented Polish composer. And I originally came across his music in the 2000s and immediately asked him to write something for me. And he came up with The Wreck of the Umbria. He works really primarily with electronics, and this was a medium that I was not exposed to, so I leapt at the opportunity because it was so different. And he, being a very adventurous person, he actually deep sea dived in the Sea of Sudan and came across this wreck of the Umbria, which was a boat that was bombed at the start of World War II, and it was an Italian boat that was bombed by the British, and so the boat had all these remnants of Italian life, including pizza ovens and wine bottles and Fiats, and now it's, you know, a magnificent kind of structure with fish darting everywhere, and the way that he composed the piece, it makes the violin sound so eerie and so atmospheric. And the electronics really can give way more of a kind of a fantasy sound. That is definitely a very important part of those two works.
Now, I know you have a history of harassing composers because you just admitted it again. and you harassed them into writing pieces for you. And finally, you got Morten Lauridsen to commit to creating an arrangement.
I have been a fan of Morten Lauridsen's for quite some time, and I would listen to O Magnum, you know, on repeat with the King Singers and just cry from the beauty and the magnificence of that piece. And I wrote to him and I said, would you please consider writing something for violin? And he said, no, I'm sorry, no. And then I wrote again and I was like, would you please, please, please consider writing anything, just a new work. And he's like, get in back of the line. I have like 500 commissions that are waiting. And, you know, there's just nothing I can do. And so finally, I invited him to a concert where I was performing Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And after that concert, he stood in line and he said hello, and he basically said, you know, whatever you'd like, I'm there for you. So I said, well, if, you know, a new piece cannot be created, how about we come to a very happy medium of arranging O Magnum for violin and orchestra? And this was something that he was very, very, it was a very enchanting idea to him, so he did that, and I'm so thrilled with the end result, and still cry every time I hear this piece.
Tell me a little bit about the pianist who is featured on four of the eight works. That's Akira Iguchi.
Yes, I really worship Akira Iguchi. He's a phenomenal pianist, and I've worked with him for decades. I can't even believe it. But we both went to the Juilliard School, and we've recorded several times together. So it was a very natural fit. Actually, he recorded the original Spiegel on my Smile album, and to have him back for round two of Spiegel and Spiegel was really special.
So this recording took you almost 10 years to put together. It's very personal for you. I'm wondering, what did you learn about yourself as you were putting it together?
I have learned that I have gotten so much from my collaborations with all these iconic, incredible composers, and that, you know, this language that they speak is so resonating with my soul, and that I hunger for these collaborations, and it's helped me develop as an artist so tremendously. I cannot imagine my life without these collaborations. So I'm so eternally grateful that each and every one of these composers has written some of the most sublime music, and that now they have left a legacy for other violinists and audiences around the world to enjoy.
And that's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this week's episode. I'm Julie Amacher.